Bhagavad Gita, verse 53. Well, first do Gita Dhyana. Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Padavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantadam Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. Sorry. Verse 53, we really did half of this. There's a little more we need to do on it. Ahamkaram balam darpam. Ahamkaram balam darpam. Kaman krodham parigraham. Kaman krodham parigraham. Vimucha nirmama shantaha. Vimucha nirmama shantaha. Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham parigraham. Vimucha nirmamaha shantaha. Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. I was just reading over what Swamiji said about this. Well, we did a little bit on the parigraham, but just to remind you, in the second line, the vimucha means like the having been completely released from, having completely given up, past indeclinable past participle, so vimucha, having given up, having been free from, being free, completely free from, what? The ahankara, which is just the identification of the body, mind, sense, organs, and other things that we talked about. Balam is strength, the strength and power that we can use to manipulate others rather than just seeing them as kind of a gift from Bhagavan that we make use of. Darpam is that need for recognition. I gave the example that Swamiji also used of a little child who loves to be recognized for every little thing that they do. They always look to their parents to get that approval and joy from their parents. But often if you don't get enough of that when you're young, that you need that continual recognition to fill yourself up. You know? So it's because to fill yourself up, you need to be made full and appreciated from others. It's not a natural abiding in yourself. And so that's that darpam. Okay? Then kama and krodha, having given up kama and krodha, because you have that karma yoga buddhi, you realize the limitations of kama. Kama means I need this in order to be happy. And when I don't get it, krodha comes. So kama and krodha, kama means desire, krodha means anger. And desire always means that, not the mithya desire, not the preference, the desire, I need this in order to be happy. And so that's a bondage. And so at some point, when I gain the viveka and the vairagya, that kama, the desire, that kama and krodha is something which I let go. It's really replaced by that karma yoga buddhi. And so, also in terms of parigraha, that giving up of kama and krodha, that non-clinging, Peter said something about this last week, it was nice, this non-clinging to kama and krodha, right, is a type of internal parigraha. But because we have kama and krodha separate from parigraha, we're not so much talking about internal parigraha, where I'm not hanging on to things. Parigraha means grasping. I'm always grasping for this and grasping for that. Pari means wherever I look, I'm meeting this and I'm meeting that, I'm collecting this and I'm collecting that. That's parigraha. You can be grasping. Also, you can look at your kama. I need the desire, the kama that comes. I want this so that I can be happy. I have an attachment to it. That's internal. But we call that kama, and the kama vimucha is taken care of. It's a type of parigraha. Anger, also my justification. This person has done this to me, this person has done that, my wanting to retaliate. That's all parigraha. Internal. I'm hanging on to all of my emotions, hanging on to my feelings, hanging on to my likes and my dislikes. It's an internal parigraha. So since that internal parigraha is basically taken care of by kama and krodha, when we're talking about parigraha, we're talking more about the external parigraha, which means really, as a sannyasi, I've already given up everything really except this knowledge. As a sannyasi, as someone who is a jnana-nishta, person, if we call a person a jnana-nishta, means it's a behoover, he one for whom there is jnana-nishta. Jnana-nishta, nishta here, has two meanings. One is, I have a single-pointed commitment to knowledge, to the gain of knowledge. Nishta is my commitment. So as a jignyasu, as a mamukshu, as a who has become a jignyasu, mamukshu means one who desires liberation. The jignyasu is the one who has recognized that the gain of liberation is only through knowledge. So the desire for liberation, mumukshu, one who desires liberation, becomes one who desires knowledge. There's a transition that takes place there from moksha, the desire for liberation, to the desire to knowledge, for knowledge, because I recognize that it's knowledge alone that gives me liberation, because I'm already free. And so one who has this, has given up this parigraha, this type of clinging and wanting this and wanting this, is a person who's already given up this kama and krodha. My pursuit now is not to become wealthy, not to become rich, not to become famous, not to become acquire this or acquire that. I don't care about these things. What I care about is gaining knowledge. So my commitment is to the gain of knowledge. So these type of external hoarding or clinging and these type of things are something that I continue to let go of. I think Swamiji says in his commentary on this, he says, you know, things are always coming our way. We're always hoarding, we're always collecting. So it's a big job to keep giving things away. You have to keep giving away and giving away and giving away, because things keep coming. And it's hard to keep up with it. You have to give away more than the things that are coming in, otherwise your house just fills up. Everything fills up, so you have to keep giving, giving, giving. And so that's a hard thing to... It's work. You know, it's like continual spring cleaning. Letting go, letting go, letting go. You know, but in the end, the real parigraha is that internally I've let go. It means you can have it all. Whatever, I'm not clinging onto anything. Mike, I don't care. You're welcome to have it. I'm free inside to let it go. This is not what my life is about at all. And so my focus now is on twofold. Jnana-nishta means shravana, manana, nididhyasana, doing whatever it takes, all the sadhanas it takes in order to gain jnana-nishta. So jnana-nishta is two. It's the commitment to gain jnana-nishta. Right? So it's the commitment and the gain of jnana-nishta. The gain of jnana-nishta is where, without obstruction, I know I am Brahman. This knowledge is absolutely aparoksha. It's absolutely immediate and clear for me. And so both the process of gaining that clarity, dhammanit tvam, adambit tvam, all the things we went through in chapter 13, lack of egoism and lack of having to pretend like I'm something better than I am, and all they go through like 14 or 15, maybe 20 different qualifications that Swamiji went through in the value of values, all of those type of things, the viveka, vairagya, shama, dhamma, uparitistiksha, shraddha, samadhana, mumukshutvam, that whole viveka, vairagya, the group of six, and the mumukshutvam, all of these values are means to gaining an antakarana shuddhi that really allows me, without obstruction, to just abide in my knowledge. None of these things give me knowledge. The values don't give me knowledge. The karma yoga doesn't give me knowledge. But it gives me a mind that is harmonious and resonant with the knowledge which I gain. Right? And so since that type of an antakarana resonates, that type of a mind resonates with my own nature, Right? I'm working to gain that type, getting rid of the obstruction, so that as I gain knowledge, it's an unobstructed knowledge. It's unobstructed by false values. You know? And gaining that type of an antahkarana, that type of mind that's not obstructed with false values, you know, is something that takes a commitment on my part, takes some effort on my part, and it also takes place in time. As you gain knowledge, your knowledge helps with that effort. It helps the mind to naturally become that way, you know, to naturally gain that karma yoga buddhi. But it also, the buddhi's commitment, that jnana-nishtha as the one who has a commitment to gaining knowledge, the buddhi's commitment to taking care of these values, these lack of, or these misvalues, you know, these erroneous values that I have that are not conducive to my happiness or the well-being of, not conducive to the well-being of myself or of others. So those things are like, are not natural to me. They're not natural to who I am, to myself. And so I do, the buddhi makes the effort, gets rid of its laziness. It makes the effort because it wants this knowledge. It wants jnana-nishtha. And so because that's what it wants, it has a passion and the energy to make the effort to change things that are just automatic habitual responses. You know? So there's a commitment there. So jnana-nishtha is that commitment for bringing, for what we call upaya nishtha. See that word nishtha? A commitment to the upaya. Upaya is the means, the container that's going to gain this knowledge. So the upaya is the antahkarana. So I want the antahkarana shuddhi. So upaya nishtha is my commitment to doing what it takes to work on my mind, on my unconscious, on all of my values and things, to help my mind resolve these type of painful problems that cause myself and others pain. I have a commitment to do that. And the other nishtha is upaya nishtha. Upaya nishtha, nishtha again. Nishtha is a commitment to the shravana manana nididhyasana. So that's when I'm looking at the process. Nishtha, jnana nishtha is commitment to the gain of knowledge both for my antahkarana shuddhi and for myself. Then there's the jnana nishtha, the one who has jnana nishtha, the one who's a jnani. Jnani means that one who has clarity, has nishtha, is rooted, well-rooted, in well-rooted. Swamiji used to always used to say well-rooted in knowledge, and then he decided, well, maybe people don't really know what I mean by well-rooted in knowledge. It means that the whole buddhi, the manas, has clarity. I know myself. There's no part of me that doesn't know myself. Right? So the knowledge is totally integrated into my mind. And so the mind has clarity. So I have jnana-nishtha, means I'm a jnani. Means I'm a jivan-mukta. Means somebody living liberated because I recognize my own nature. I know myself. Sometimes now, in the meditations, we're doing this one little type of shift where you go from gently focusing on your being, on yourself, being relaxed. The buddhi is gently focusing on your being. And why I say gently focusing on your being is so that you don't feel that you have to get rid of all thoughts or all perceptions. It's not that. None of them are covering you in any way, just like the pot's not covering the clay. None of the experiences that you're having cover you, but the buddhi can be focused on them, right? Instead of focused on you. So allowing it all to be, you gently focus, the buddhi gently focuses on you. Okay? And letting all experiences be welcomed means there's no stress, there's no pushing away. Everybody, there's like Ishwara, for Ishwara, there's room for everybody. Everybody has their place. There's no desire to push away. And even for one who is pushing away, they are welcome too. The whole shebang, everybody inside and out, is just given their place, and that allows the buddhi to relax, 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 relax until it becomes very, very diffuse. And as that happens, really what is most present for you experientially is just you. So now instead of just the buddhi just gently focusing on you, then I'll say something like, you just be yourself. So instead of the buddhi, using the buddhi to kind of turn itself towards you, you're just recognizing that you are you. Because you are really the conscious being that lights up the buddhi. You're the aparoksha jnanam. You are you. You're not the buddhi. You're not the manas. You're not the body. You're not the creation. The creation is you. It has no being apart from you. But you do not depend on it for any way. In any way. So as you relax all of the tension, then you just sit and just be yourself. You know, don't worry about whatever the thoughts or whatever's going on. That's all Maya. That's just Ishwara. Just let it all be. Don't worry about it. You just sit. You know, like if you think of the Dakshinamurti, you know, at the ashram, you just sit and just be. Just be yourself. That's a very beautiful meditation. But to set yourself up for that, it's good to just welcome everything. Like when Swamiji says, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. In the end, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. All that means is that you are you. Brahman, yourself, nothing is threatening. It's abhayam. Nothing. It doesn't, it's your nature doesn't threaten anybody, nor is it threatened by anybody. So just recognizing that abhayam, and then giving the buddhi, get used to giving space for everyone. Nobody is rejected because nobody can change me. Nobody. Nothing. Even Ishwara cannot. Swamiji used to say this. It's so beautiful. Even Ishwara cannot hurt me or change me because I am the Satchitananda Brahman, which is the very self of Ishwara. Even Ishwara can't hurt himself. Whole creation, the whole infinite creation can't hurt the self. I am that self. Nothing can hurt me, not even Ishwara. And with that, I can just notice that over and over and over again. You just continue to be yourself and recognizing that nothing ever, ever happens to you. Nothing in the environment, no person, no situation touches your being in any way. And as you gain, as the buddhi gains the confidence in that recognition, you know, you become somebody who really can, outside of meditation, welcome other people. You can welcome them because you're not afraid of them. The reason we don't welcome people is we're afraid. We're afraid that they're going to upset us or hurt us or cause us some pain in some way. They're not going to touch you at all. You know? As you start to really understand that, then all of the problem people, it's not like there aren't problem people. There's problems here and problems there and problems, all kinds of problems, all kinds of difficult situations. But you can just objectively deal with it because it's not hurting you. That's different than getting in all into an emotional funk around the whole thing. There doesn't have to be any emotional trauma around having to deal with the world. You can just, you have to deal with it, but it doesn't have to be an emotional trauma. We're dealing with, we've decided in ourselves, our own ajnanam makes it a trauma, makes what doesn't need to be a trauma, a trauma. So it's not somebody's doing anything to us. They can't do anything. They're not ever doing, nobody, the whole universe can't, is not doing anything to me. It cannot. And so that means that as I recognize the fact of that, my mind can enjoy my own wholeness, my own ananda, and then just deal with Ishwara, be with Ishwara, do what's there. You know, like Swamiji will say, just every moment I do what's there to be done. I don't worry about tomorrow. I just simply do what's here to be done to the best of my ability. If it's a difficult person or a hurtful person or an angry person, then to the best of my ability, I'm with that person. But I don't feel threatened inside. So that takes, you know, some consciousness. Consciousness in the sense of alertness. You know, And that alertness takes a passion. It's like a dedication. To understand it, you know, when they say it takes, this is Indian, but it's also been backed up by this Malcolm Gladwell. He's done some studies on this. It takes 12 years of committed effort to gain mastery over something. Like say you want to be a piano player, or you want to be a musician, or you want to be a tennis player. To gain a level of mastery, and then of course you live with that mastery and that gives all kinds of other fruits, but to gain a level of mastery, it means you are committed to that skill or developing that art form, whatever it is, for 12 years. 12 years of commitment, right? It's not 12 years of I want to learn how to play the piano. It's 12 years of playing the piano and making appropriate effort. And so here, there's two things involved here. There's the jnanam, self-knowledge, gaining knowledge, which requires getting yourself in front of the pramana. Right? Knowledge is not an effort. The effort, all the effort is getting yourself in line with that pramana, and then also doing what's necessary for your antakarana in order to be able to receive that pramana. The pramana doesn't require effort, but getting yourself to class requires effort. Working on your antakarana shuddhi requires effort, and you have a commitment to do it. Why? Because that mumukshutvam is there. The mumukshutvam means I've recognized the limitation. I need to have this knowledge. You know, the example they give for mumukshu is somebody, you know, sadhu, say a brahmachari or a sadhu who has this all this jada. You know, big hair, all wrapped hair, and a spark from the fire lights his hair. You know, now his hair's on fire. Okay, and there's the lake. So he has a total commitment to get to that lake quickly. Right, that's what they talk when they say mumukshutvam. I want this knowledge. I really don't want anything else. So the degree you want other things, that then karma yoga comes into play and. You know, this knowledge gradually grows in its depth. But the mumukshu, when we talk about a mumukshu or a jignyasu, it's one whose hair is in fire, and what they want is this knowledge. And they will do what it takes to work through the problems in the antakarana, the complexes and the problems that we have and the reactions and the way that we are that is problematic and hurtful. It's okay. We accept that. We accept it and we work on it. And that's our job. That's what we're doing. That's our commitment. Okay, so here, this is all started around this parigraham. Parigraham means I let go of everything else except this. This is what's important. And then, so then Shankara says, like the next one is nirmama. Having let go of all of these things, and just living the life of a sannyasi, then this sense of myness, you know, I've let go of all these things, no my, this is not mine, this is not mine, this is not mine, I let go of them all. You're finally left with the body. And you might have your kamandalu and those type of things, you know, your little kamandalu is your begging bowl and this few little things you might have. You let go of all those things, but you've still got this body. You have to let go of this body also. Because this body also is not really yours. It's part of this prarabdha karma. It belongs to your family. It belongs to your students. It belongs to your teachers. It belongs to whoever is, you know, all of the people that you, and in as your life unfolds, all of the people that need you for certain things. In this sense, I'm not saying it quite right. Look at the prarabdha like this prarabdha is flowing. Right now we are in a shared prarabdha. At this moment, okay? So in this moment, for all of us, without any, not anything to do with any of us really, we all find ourselves in a situation where there are certain expectations for each one of us. This is my role in this particular situation. Well, the whole life is like that. The role that you are in is given to you by the situation. What does Bhagawan expect of you in this situation? What is your dharma in this situation? And so the situation, your body is part of the situation. Your body is owned by the expectations of the dharma of the situation, if that makes sense. It's not my body that is something different from all of this. This body belongs to this. So, and then you extend it, this body belongs to Ishvara. This body is part of Ishvara. And so what is this Ishvara asking of me in this moment? And that's what I do. I do my dharma moment by moment by moment, because that's what is expected of me. That's what's expected of this body. So it's not my body to just call the shots. You see what I mean? So this body also is given over to Ishvara. I like to think of this, to understand it, like if you think of a dream, in the dream bodies are part of the dream. They belong to the dream story. Even the body, if you're identified with a character in the dream, that character, even though you're identified, that's just the ahankara, that character still is part of the dream. You're not outside of the dream, entering into it, doing what you want in the dream. You're part of the dream. So like that, all of us are part of our karma. We're part of Ishvara. And then because you have free will, you're struggling around, you know, to try to do your own thing, but that doesn't really work. You try to do your own thing and create kind of a mess and tension and strife, and then you relax and just allow the life to take you along with it and do what you're being asked, what's being asked of you. Now what's interesting is sometimes because of your prarabdha karma and your own desires match, everything's going fine. Because your desire, the desire that you're having, is totally in harmony with the prarabdha karma. And then things are just flowing along your way, you know. That's why, if you understand that, that's exactly how this karma yoga buddhi comes into play. Because with the karma yoga buddhi, I say, it's a way of saying, Bhagavan, I want what you want. Whatever you want, that's what I want. And I want to do it to the best of my ability. Because then, sometimes what I want is what Bhagavan wants, and sometimes there's some resistance, and when there's a resistance, I say, no, I want what you want. I want to do my dharma in this situation. But what is the alternative? The alternative is to do what isn't my dharma in the situation. What is inappropriate in the situation, and I'm doing what is inappropriate in the situation because that ahankara is there, that kama krodha is there, you know, and then I become a jiva. The jiva is born. But when I'm doing that karma yoga buddhi, I'm withdrawing from the jivatvam, and I am being Ishvara. You are being Ishvara. Why? Because I'm being myself, and I'm welcoming what is. Then I'm just being Ishvara. I'm being myself as Brahman, and I'm letting this body, mind, sense organs being part of the creation, being Ishvara. I'm doing and doing what is natural, what is asked of me in this given situation. So that's Niramama. When I have that, free of this minus, that shanti is natural. Because I'm not resisting Bhagavan, and my mind, myself, is Ananda. So there's no resistance on the part of the buddhi. I'm enjoying the wholeness of my being, right? I'm one with Ishvara. There's no resistance, there's only shanti there. There's a total resolution, in fact, of the jiva. So, but what he says, then he says, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, the one who has this, we've done some verses here to get to this point. The one who has that, that person is fit, kalpate, is fit to become Brahman. Brahma Bhuyaya. What they mean is by to become Brahman, it's not that you become Brahman, but you are fit to recognize yourself as Brahman. Yeah. That's how you become Brahman. You've always been Brahman, you will always be Brahman, you've never not been Brahman, but that ajnanam is there, so that the mind takes yourself to be a jiva. right? So that jiva has to resolve into Brahman. The jiva, with the removal of ajnana and the jivatvam resolves, and I recognize myself as Brahman. I am Brahman. So I as though become Brahman. In the resolution of the ajnanam, right, the resolution of the ajnanam, the one who thought she was a jiva, or he was a jiva, recognizes I am Brahman. I have always been Brahman. There's never a time that I haven't been Brahman, but I hadn't recognized I was Brahman. To recognize I am Brahman, I need a mind that's capable of recognizing that, right? And I need a pramana, you know, that will give me that knowledge. Now, when we say you need a mind that's capable of recognizing that, you already have a mind that's capable of recognizing it, right? Or you wouldn't be here. So the mumukshutvam will bring you to your teacher. There's no question. The mumukshutvam, you will become a jinyasu, you will be brought to your teacher, you will gain this knowledge, and then you will have paribandhikas. Everybody. You gain this knowledge, you see clearly, and then your mind is not living up to your knowledge. And you want your mind to live up to your knowledge. And so then all of these behaviors that are don't resonate with me, we call paribandhikas. They're paribandhika jnanam. That's where the antaka, they're viewed as obstructions to my knowledge. Because I know I am Ananda, I know I am Ishwar, and I'm acting like a jiva. And so that takes time. It takes time in my knowledge and kind of a commitment to that kind of jiva toward behavior. You know, I have a commitment to resolving that, to working on that, so that I can just abide, you know, in my knowledge as a jiva mukta, as one who's living liberated, one who has jnana nishta, one who has clarity, whose mind is clear without obstructions in the light of this knowledge. Okay, so then, just to start this next verse. Om Brahma-bhuta prasannātmā, Brahma-bhuta prasannātmā, Nishochati nakankshati, Nishochati nakankshati, Samasarveshu bhuteshu, Samasarveshu bhuteshu, Madbhaktim labhate param, Madbhaktim labhate param, Brahma-bhutaha prasanna-ātmā, Na shochati na kankshati samaha sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktin labhate param. Brahmabhuta, this is for the sannyasi, the jivanmukta. Brahmabhuta, the one who has become Brahman, means the one who recognizes I am Brahman, right? That ajnanam is gone, that Brahmabhutaha prasanna atma, whose mind, here Atma's mind, whose mind is prasanna, really enjoys the shanti, all of the shanti that was just, we went through the shantaha, brahmabhuyaya kalpate, the one who really enjoys that shanti. Why? Because there's no resistance. I welcome my experience and I am whole. My being is whole, I welcome my experience. If, to understand this welcoming, I welcome all of my experience and I do objectively what needs to be done. That means I'm also welcoming all of the little ones inside, all of the hurt ones inside, all of the different areas of trauma and hurt inside. I welcome all of them, and I help. I do what is to be done. I do my dharma for those little ones, and I do my dharma for these out here. Internally, externally, doesn't make any difference. I do what needs to be done, welcoming them all. And like, say, for instance, I'm welcoming somebody who's inimical to me or for whom there's a hurtful relationship, then the little one inside says, I'm not going to welcome that person, you know, is resisting. Then that one, you understand also. Then that one needs some attention. Everybody needs attention. There's not anything, whether it's an external or internal, somebody needs attention. They need some attention. They need some love. They need some care. They need to be understood in this way or that way. That's what we do. That means the whole Ishwara is welcomed, and I do my dharma internally and externally to be helpful, to be a helpful person. That's nothing else, just objectively to be a helpful person. So when that's the case, that prasannatma, that mind has shanti, the buddhi has shanti, because it knows the self, it knows Ishvara, it knows how to be. It knows how to be objective, to be helpful. And that person, nishochati, that is cheerful-minded person. That person does not grieve. I didn't get this, or my body's not good enough, or my eyesight's not good enough, or this is not good, or why did this happen to me? No. Why don't I have more money and this person has more money? No. This is my prarabdha, this is Ishvara, this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Bhagavan. Let me just be present to what I have, to what is. Let me to be cheerful. That prasannatma, so that cheerfulness is there, nikanchati, without any type of longing. There is nothing to long for, because I already have recognized myself as the very ananda or wholeness that I've sought. So there's no longing, because I already am what all beings seek. And there's no grief, because there's nothing that I need to become, that I need to have be different. I let the prarabdha, I let Ishvara take care of Ishvara's life, Ishvara's dream. You know? And so I'm a part of it, so I allow it to be. It's fine, whatever it is. This body is going to get sick and die. And that's how it is. So everybody's going to get sick and die. They're not immortals. We're not immortals here. And so there's going to be hardship and suffering and all this. I allow it. It's part of the creation. You know? I don't grieve for something that's inevitable. I accept it. I be with it. And if I shed tears for somebody that I loved who I've lost, I have a joy at being able to shed those tears, because that person deserved those tears then. There's a whole different way of being with your grief. Grief is a beautiful thing. If somebody, like say, if somebody who you loved enough to grieve for is such an honor for that person or for that animal, say or your pet, you love them enough to grieve for them. That's something for that person to feel very pleased that they meant enough to be grieved for. You know, there's something beautiful, and you can feel that beauty also, I know, for when I lost people in my life. I appreciated that I would grieve for that person, because that person deserved that grief. There's something very beautiful about it. There's an underlying joy. There's an underlying joy, and it's like a gift. Your grief is a gift, and it's an honor of the honoring of that person. So you're not afraid of that. You know? And the kankshati, you're not longing for everything, because you already are. You already are everything. And then one, probably spend more time next week on this last line. It's a beautiful line, just quickly. It says, Samaha Sarva Bhuteshu. Also, is that for the jnani, they're talking about the jnani here. I recognize myself to be the same in all beings. What I would want, all beings want. What I don't want, all beings don't want. It's that, like that golden rule. I own that in my relationship with others. I understand others are the same as me. Not on just a theoretical level, but what I would want, this person wants. What I wouldn't want, this person doesn't want. And so I don't want to do that to this person. I don't want it done to me, and I don't want it done to you. I would like this done to me, and I would like that done to you. And so that golden rule is not just extended to me, which is the normal ajnanam case. I understand Dharma completely, the golden rule, doing to others as you would have done to others, and do to others what you would have done to you, and don't do to, this is the Indian version, and don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to you. We all humans, we all, even animals to a certain extent, understand this golden rule in reference to yourself, so that this person is mistreating me. They're not following the golden rule. The way that they're treating me, you know, is wrong. They're treating me in a way that they wouldn't ever want to be treated, and here they are treating me in that way. Right? So we all understand that it's like an innate dharma. It's dharma is innate, you know, but it's focused on me. It's not the same. or we have this innate understanding of Dharma, how others should treat me, that doesn't mean that we know how to treat others, that we should treat others in that way. But for the Mahatma, for the Jnani, as a person becomes mature, you do know that others don't want to be treated that way, or others do want to be treated that way. It's important to you. It's as important to you as that you would like others to treat you in this way. See what I mean? It's balanced. It's both external and in, I mean, it goes outward as well as comes inward. So as I know I would like to be treated, that's how I will treat you. I will. It's as natural to me as how I would want to be treated. That's the idea. So the Samaha Sarvabhukteshu is very beautiful. That's what makes a person a saint. That which makes a person abhayam for you. You become free. You become free of fear of them. That's the abhayam. So this abhayam vow, the sannyasa vow, let no being, let me, goes like this, let me not be afraid of any being. Because if I'm not afraid of any being, then I have no reason to push them away or reject them or hurt them in any way. I'm not afraid of them in any way. So let me not be afraid of any being, and let no being be afraid of me. But beings will be afraid of me if I'm afraid of them. And you have to think of being afraid of them on a psychological level, of pushing them away in this way. So different, all different levels of rejection. Because there's something about you that I react to. But what about when I no longer react to you? Then you can just be. And so that's a huge, huge gift to humanity, you know, to give people, to be big enough to, inside of yourself, to let people really be. So we grow into this. It's a value for the value, and then, you know, we do our best and we continue growing and we grow into it. That's how it is. We grow into it over time. And you can watch yourself. We all know we're becoming bigger and we're becoming bigger and we're becoming bigger. You know, as you're becoming bigger and, you know, problems and reacting mind, ways of being are falling off. You're very aware of that. You know, and it's something very, very pleasing. It's a beautiful thing. You become more loving person, you know you're more loving person. You're a kinder person, you know you're a kinder person. You're more like yourself. Why it's so pleasing? It's because you're becoming more like who you are. You're becoming more like the self that you are. So then this mud bhakti labhate param, such a person, he gains that highest bhakti. That the second line, whole second line, I'm going to do a little bit more on next week. Okay, we'll do it. Work on it next week. These two verses are so nice. So, okay, let's stop here. Time's up. Om swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmanebhyah shivamasti nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobarahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. Sarve santi niramayaha, sarve padrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
Relates to something you said at the beginning that I can't quite remember. But you were saying during class, like, you know that you're Brahman and you know that you're Ishwar. So then my question would be, we're using the word you or
yeah.
I know I'm Brahman. I know I'm Brahman. I know I'm Ishwar.
Yeah.
But the I, where's this I landing? It must be landing on the Buddhi, the God sentence.
If you say, yeah, in it, let me explain it. The buddhi, you have to remember, for Brahman, there's no upadhi. I mean, when we're talking just about Brahman. So Brahman, yourself, or the Atma, which is Brahman, it just is its own self-evident experience, just conscious being. There's no words, there's no ajnanam, there's just freedom, conscious being. It's the buddhi, the body, mind, sense organs complex that is suffering from ajnanam. That buddhi does not know the satya-mitya relationship that it has with the self. So just like the pot doesn't, it knows it's clay, but it doesn't know that the clay is free of it. It doesn't know that. But it takes the clay to belong to itself. So the buddhi takes me to belong to itself. And so what that means is that when the buddhi is happy, I am happy. When the buddhi is sad, buddhi, mind, manas, you know. When the buddhi is happy, I'm happy. When the buddhi is sad, I'm sad. Or when the manas is sad, however you want to say it, when the mind is sad. And then I take the identification with the body, etc. So this, what we call this anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition, right, that's natural and beginningless, the buddhi suffers from. So it says, I am the self, and the self that I am take has all of these different qualities and all of these different emotions, and it has, and the body looks like this. So that's the ahankara, right? When the buddhi gains knowledge, it will say, I recognize, I now know myself, the Atma, because that ajnanam has been removed. So that's the buddhi recognizing me. But the me that it recognizes is self-evident. And so what it recognizes it also is that the self-evident me is illumining it, right? And so it's the buddhi that's talking, not the Atma that's talking. But the self of the buddhi is the Atma. The self of the buddhi is Brahman. You see what I mean? It just recognizes by getting rid of the ajnanam that viveka is now there. But it also recognizes itself as mitya, and it recognizes what we call the adhishtana, that which the mitya depends on for it to be, because mitya has no being of its own. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so then in that case, is this then sort of an example of that? One of the most sort of interesting things I ever heard Swamiji say, it really struck me, that the most, he said the most important word in the teaching of Vedanta is the word eva, as though.
As though, yeah.
So is this
the eva is mitya.
Right. So this is kind of like saying, I know I'm Brahman, I know I'm Ishwar, but then it's kind of like as though the jiva saying that. The jiva is as though, sort of.
Well, anything that is mitya is as though.
Right.
Because mithya has no being apart from Brahman. So really, because the only thing really here is Brahman.
Yeah.
Right? And so the as though jiva, but the what we're talking about is any type of nama-rupa, you know, is enjoying Brahman for its being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that and the other thing to, that makes this really important is realizing, like, if I, in the meditation, if I say, now just be yourself. The one who's shining there as me is Brahman. So I'm just being me. And that me that I am is not changing in any way. So instead of, when I say just be yourself, now instead of the ahankara being with the buddhi, now the aham is with me. Because I actually am Brahman. My own being is changeless. So I just have to recognize myself as changeless. It's not like the buddhi is always a mirror looking at me. The mirror, I have removed ajnanam from that buddhi. So now I can just actually be me. Like even right at this moment, you simply are. Your being simply is. So not never doing anything. It's always, it's whole and complete. You know? You are whole and complete. And then there's the buddhi and the manas. All these things are mithya. You know, they're all illumined, but you are the center. So it's just a slight shift, but it's a very beautiful shift. And now it's now instead of the ahankara, there's the aham landing on yourself, which is Brahman, which you've recognized because that ajnanam has been removed. It's not just recognizing you. It's recognizing, that's the recognizing you, the atma, that what we call the pratyagatma, that innermost self. But I recognize the limitlessness of it, that there is no second thing, because I've known the satya mitya. I know that it's changeless and free of time. So there's so much teaching that goes in to recognizing that this me is Ishwara, is non-dual. To recognize that I am non-dual.
So that's where it's sort of like maybe it comes in that the knowledge is for the... with the mithya mind.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's famous verses in the Mandukya that we're doing. The jnanam and the knowledge and ignorance, guru and sisha, the Vedas themselves are all mithya. All that duality is, Brahman has no problem. Brahman is non-dual. My being right now, or the being of an ajnani, is just whole and complete. But the mind is creating havoc. It's because of ajnanam, it's creating so many painful experiences. And then the mind is focused on those painful experiences and focused on the body, which is getting old and dying, you know?
Swamiji once said, I heard him say in teaching, being a jiva is fun. And I don't really understand that, but maybe, do you think what he meant was when you know that jivatvam is nitya, then that's
fun. Yeah, because... You see, the thing is you gain this knowledge and your prarabdha, you still have prarabdha left. And so now you're walking around in Ishwara. You're walking around in yourself. And you're not dependent on the world to take care of you, to make you whole. You already are whole. And this body, mind, sense, organs belongs to Ishwara. And you get to be taken care of by the whole. Now, it's different when the jivatvam comes in, which means... Here I am, the conscious being in this world. I have to make my own way. You know, that's samsara. That's the life of a samsari. But there's the life of a jivan mukta is quite a bit different than that. Yeah. Even though both the samsari and the jivan mukta are living their prarabdha karma. And we're all pretty good at that when, in hindsight. You see the pattern of your life in hindsight. But the jnani sees the pattern of the life all the time because there's a shraddha in Ishwara. Do you like to see how Ishwara is handling this situation and what comes next? And it's okay to not know what comes next.
And how do you do that? You know, you have a sense of me, and the sense of me seems like it's a body, but you're saying that it's Ishwara's unfoldment.
I'm saying the sense of me is Brahman. Is the one me that is the self of the whole creation.
Mm-hmm.
You think, as because of ajnanam, a person thinks that this me, that feeling of myself, my being that makes me me, is because of this body, mind, sense organs. Mm-hmm. And this body, mind, sense organs has its own unique me. Mm-hmm. I'd say no, it has its own unique body. It has its own unique thoughts. It has its own unique emotions, its own unique little children inside and all of that. Its own unique prarabdha. But the me is just the one non-dual me of the whole creation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easy to understand, I think, if you think of the dream, there's one me that the whole dream is enjoying, the me of the waker. The whole dream is enjoying that me. And even the character you're identified with, unless you have a dream, you don't always have, usually don't have a dream. In the dream, you're not usually a jnani in the dream, but when you wake up and you remember the dream, you say, yeah, there's only one me there. You know? Like that, there's only this me that you're experiencing as yourself right now. That self-experience is the one non-dual self-experience.
Okay, but then I feel like I'm the body. How can I feel like I'm Ishwara, even knowing this non-dual sense of me as one?
You don't feel like you're Ishwara.
No.
You're not going to feel like you're Ishwara.
I feel like I'm body.
Yeah, you feel like you're the body because the sense of touch, when we're talking about feeling, the sense of touch goes through the whole body. The sukshma sharira, subtle body, is goes through this whole body. So it's not going through the rug, right?
Sure.
And so your sense of meanness in terms of the upadhi, as long as you have an upadhi, is going to stop right here. But once that viveka is there, your sense of me is not objectified as the body and mind sense organs are. Mm-hmm. And so now what does that mean when your me, when your self, is not objectified, it's not one of the objects in time and space? There's nothing to make me, who's not objectifiable in time and space, be different from you.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a logic that I have to understand.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay, but if you've got that, then this me, that is me, is only one.
Yeah.
And then I have to understand that this one me, is it this one me, and then this multiplicity here, this dual world? Or is this mitya? So there's a lot of teaching involved to make a person really understand that this is mitya. Means it's like the clay pot.
Okay, so if you know that this is mitya, then you're... how do you sense this physical body then?
Just like you do. I mean, Jnani's going to sense the physical body in the same way, because the sukshma sharira is there, and the mind is there, the thoughts are there, the emotions are there. They don't have the same, probably a lot of those negative emotions don't come anymore because the mind's more or less fulfilled itself and you're ananda, but still the mind is there as a mind. Buddhi is there as buddhi. Sense organs are there as sense organs.
But you know what, you can still have pain.
But all the while, these experiences of the upadhi and the experiences of the prarabdha karma are there, all the while you are changelessly there.
Mm-hmm. Too. So.
Yeah, but so there's a double awareness in a way. There's
the
changelessness of your own being, and then there's all the experiences that are coming and going. And all those experiences, including all that belong to the body, mind, sense organs, all of those that are coming and going, all of them belong to Ishwara, just like in the dream. This body, mind, sense organs is part of the creation. It's not separate from it. It's part of Ishwara.
I still didn't get to where I wanted to go.
Well, you, the so, problem, no, this isn't, okay, but this is a recurring problem because you want to experience the self out here, but you'll never experience the self out here because the self is self-evident, not objectifiable. And yet, none of this is ever away from me.
Right. Okay, so you're illumining a painful, a negative experience.
Yeah. But,
how does that play out in reference to what you just said?
The negative experience also belongs to Ishwara. It can be your own ajnana that has caused it, but there's nothing outside of Ishwara.
Yeah. It's more...
It can be generated by this upadhi. A negative experience or a negative emotion can be generated by your own personal upadhi, but this upadhi belongs to Ishwara, and belongs, is taken care of by the laws of Ishwara. Mm-hmm. So there's all, say if you have a negative emotion, that's why sometimes we do meditations where, you know, you, so you have a negative emotion and usually that's caused by something or someone. So you put yourself that dyad. And then you see what has led up to the production of this emotion. Emotions are produced, you know. And you have to see all the parts of the puzzle that went into the creation of this negative emotion. And then you let Ishwara have all that whole thing.
Oh, it's right at that point. It's right at that point.
Yeah.
Yes.
But is it also helpful to kind of, you know, Swamiji sometimes he does these meditations like apple consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, so is that also helpful to kind of like, you know, this, like that nothing is outside of your awareness?
Yeah, like, well, we do that all the time. I love when Swamiji does it. Like you'd say, you know, like painting consciousness, rug consciousness, chair consciousness. Everything is enjoying consciousness. Everything is enjoying. Sometimes we do it with isness.
Yeah.
This is this isness or consciousness. They do it with both consciousness and isness. Like Swamiji will say, like apple consciousness, chair consciousness.
Yeah.
Instead of you are conscious of the chair, they're chair consciousness. You know.
Is that how you recognize the non-dual nature of everything?
I think there's many, many ways of unfolding the mityatva.
Mm-hmm.
To understand, to recognize the mityatva of everything that you experience, you first have to recognize the adhishtana. You have to recognize the satchit that is changeless.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to recognize there is no experience away from that satchit at all. That's adhishtana.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to see, okay, there is no experience away from the satchit. And you have to look at the experience itself. Does the experience have any being independent of that satchit? So now, that's what has to be accomplished, but there's many prakriyas.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be attacking that
mm-hmm.
from many different angles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not just one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You okay?
Mm-hmm. I'm a bit distracted today.
This last chapter.
But I was just thinking, actually, if you don't mind, that I just had an insight from what you were just saying about this noise that, whatever that music or whatever it is, it's kind of annoying. And I was thinking of it as somebody playing a boombox out there. But then when you talked about, you know,
it's noise consciousness.
Noise, yeah, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's me. And and my mind kind of went back and forth, and it clarified one way to be ignorant, which is imagining that there's a separate thing out there. But it became clear that that's just an imagination.
Well, what's an imagination?
The anyonya adhyasa.
Oh.
Well, no, that there's a separate, like that there's...
There's no separate
noise machine out there that's separate from me, that's causing a problem for me.
In the end, there is nothing out there that's separate from you. You have no. It's impossible to have an experience, any experience, which is devoid of the satchit of your being. It's not possible. And then when you recognize that the satchit of your being is not objectifiable, then even though you don't have all experiences that exist in the universe, this upadhi doesn't, all of them have the same satchit as their being. Because the satchit is not an object in the world, it's the existence, the being that all things in the world depend upon. Because then we have to prove that nothing in the world has any independent being of its own, because it all comes into being and goes out of being, and it's all infinitely divisible. So these are all prakriyas that have to be, you know, elaborated on.
I don't know. It seems a funny thing to say after, like, talking about all these complexities, but I was thinking about when you're talking about, we always talk so much about knowledge and jignasu and the focus on gaining knowledge, but I have that in my mind lately about how really how simple knowledge is. Like, it's very, very simple, and you could really boil it down to like a few major things about like who are you and what is real in the world, you know, just like
very simple.
So once you understand those things,
yeah,
the idea of like seeking knowledge seems a little odd to me. Like, okay, I get those, and I understand there's like a subtleties and many things you can see it different ways, and you don't fully understand it
yeah.
because you're still, you know, identified with your body in different ways. But what if we understand these basic like tenets at least?
It's true. There's nothing more simple. But then the mind has to unwind a lot. Okay, so if the mind unwinds, what it ends up recognizing is something very, very basic and very, very, very simple. And then you start realizing that all of these prakriyas are just dancing around the same thing. Swamiji says it's like an elephant dancing on a stump trying to be creative, you know, and it only has these few things to really say. But the problem, there are pratibandhakas. Your mind, inside and out, in the unconscious, you know, and in all of our experiences and all of our understandings of dharma and adharma, the mind has some transformative work to do around this knowledge. Right? And so there are parts of the mind, because the mind is rather complex and it has many little compartments. There's parts of the mind that really don't get this. The intellect can get it. It can be like the intellect can write a book on it. But that doesn't mean that you have seen it, you know? And so as this teaching takes place, you actually see it more and more and more, the reality of it, because it's a pramana. It's pointing, pointing, pointing. And so as you do see it, you know, then you find on an emotional level also things start falling into place. And that's a process that takes longer than the actual recognition of this knowledge. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had this, you know, when I work in Bali, I'm making a dye, and when the dye is fixed, it binds chemically to the fabric, so it becomes one.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of thinking of absorbing this knowledge in the same...
Yeah, all of the parts of the psyche get infiltrated. what's the right word? Yeah, get totally pervaded.
Permeated.
Permeated.
So what
over time.
What was that remark again that Joni said? What did...
She used the dye in her batik. Tell us again, Joni. It's nice.
When I'm doing the batik, there's a certain tight end of the process where it gets dipped in the fixative, and then it gets boiled, and the fixative plus the heat makes a chemical reaction in the fabric. That's what they call them, chemically reactive dyes. And then it becomes part of the fabric. And that's how I'm taking in this knowledge. That
it's getting fixed.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
That's nice. Yeah.
Well, we're getting fixed.
We're getting fixed.
Get the batik, they go like, oh, is it going to wash out? You know, is it going to fail? You know, no, because it's now...
You know how they kind of have, in other traditions, they have that kind of neti-neti thing, you know?
Not this, not that.
You don't do that here, do we?
We do. With the Drishta Viveka, we do neti-neti. But you can't stop there, because you negate everything, and then you've got this thing over here that's been negated, and you're over here. As though there's two realities. So,
start with the body-mind complex.
Yeah, but the neti-neti is not this, like, there's a subject-object differentiation, and you are differentiated from those things that you objectified. So that's not this, not this, not this. And in the Upanishads, this neti-neti comes in the Chandogya Upanishad. Actually, not this. It's the drishta viveka, the seer seen discrimination that is the neti neti. But the thing is, you don't stop there. You get to the atma, then the atma you recognize as Brahman, then you go back to the creation and recognize it's mitya. But it starts with neti neti.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, in a lot of the teaching, what we call the prakriyas, the drishta viveka is often the first prakriya that's used. Teaching methodology that's used, because it allows you to get to just know yourself naked without the upadis, But then you have to recognize that you really are the self of all of the upadis. So now Swamiji's starting more doing Kariya Karana, the cause, noticing cause-effect, and having the cause-effect in terms of the material cause of this creation, then realize that has to, cause-effect relationship has to work into Satya Mitya. But we could just spend, like he'll say, we just, here we are in this room with this body, mind, sense organs, and then recognizing our being in this room with these and doing some sort of differentiation work there. He's doing it. It's really beautiful. It's harder. It's easier to do the Drik Drisha Viveka,
yeah.
But then when you do that, you're left with a duality.
Yeah.
Could you go through that one more time?
Yeah, I didn't quite get that either, the cause effect.
Well, there's the main, there's different prakriyas. There's two very main prakriyas, is the Drik Drisha, Sirsin, Viveka,
yeah.
And the Karya Karana, where the Upadana Karana, the material cause of the of the karya, of the namarup, of the name and form. Like, for instance, the upadana karana of the clay pot is the clay. The pot, right, is the effect, right? So the cause is the clay, the effect is the pot. But actually, that cause-effect relationship is only satya-mitya, because there is no separate pot. Right, so here we have to take, here you are, your body, mind, sense organs, you. Okay? But you, yourself, pervades completely all of the experience of your body, mind, sense organs. So now we have to differentiate in terms of you. What is the upadana karana? What is actually there, and what is the nama-rupa? You know? And so you can do some teaching methodologies that make you focus just on your own presence. Like, so I've done it a few times in the meditation. Like, if you say, okay, I am the body. I am the body. Well, because it's true, right? If the pot were to say, I am the clay, that's true. So if I say, I am the body, now what I want to do is recognize my own being in the form of this body. And then I can recognize it in the form of I am my mind. The same me that is the body is the mind. Right? So I'm taking the mitya effect and recognizing the upadana karana, the material cause. So that's just a different teaching methodology. We use all of them. You know?
You've done that before.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, I have. But I haven't talked a lot about it as this Kariya Karana.
This is what you usually talk about as Satyamitya, right?
It is Satyamitya.
It's the same. Kariya
Karana.
Slightly different language.
We use the Kariya Karana, that's the name of the prakriya. The Kariya Karana is the cause effect. But the cause effect relationship resolves into Satyamitya. Because there is no second. There's only one material cause without anything outside of it, which is consciousness. Like the clay pot, there's only clay there. There's no pot, right? There's only clay. So the upadana karana, the material cause, is the reality, and the pot is there, but it's mitya, because it's not apart from the material cause.
So
doesn't Drik Drisha resolve there too?
It does. But you go circuitous. See, Drik Drisha, you're differentiating the subject from the object. Then you're left with the subject. Then you see that the subject is now not objectifiable. And so there can only be one. Okay, so now you have one subject who's not even a knower, because all of the instruments of knowledge have been objectified. So now you have just this me, and there's no way, and you have to go into another part of the Drik Drisha, recognizing that there's no way that this me can be different from you. The bodies can be different, the mind can be different, the sense organs can be different, but the me can't be, because it's not objectifiable for there to be anything come between us. But now we still have dvaita. We still have this me, this one conscious being, but now we have to come back out to this creation. So we've got the me and the creation.
Okay.
And now we have to reduce the creation to mitya, to realize. And so there's just more steps. It's important. Swamiji does all of them. He never, all of the prakriyas are important because they just come at it from a different way, you know. And in the end, they all end up supporting each other.
And, you know,
and they all have limitations. So you need all of them.
Yeah. But aside from that, you know, this value of non-clinging, it's like if you want to change the nama-rupa, that's that clinging you're talking about, making the nama-rupa different.
Well, if you want to change something as a preference, it's fine. But if you think that your ananda is dependent on it, that's ajnanam. It's like, say, you know, in Swamiji's famous story about the animal crackers, you know, the graham crackers? There's a giraffe graham cracker and there's a horse graham cracker, right? You had these boxes of animal crackers, so there's a giraffe and the horse and the dog, etc. And then so now, do you want the graham cracker or you want the horse? Right? Because if you want the horse, you're going to be in trouble. But if you want the graham cracker, you're fine, right? Because there's only three horses and there are 10 kids, they all decide they want the horse. And who wants the giraffe? Nobody wants the giraffe. Okay. Or whatever, the mouse. Nobody wants the mouse. Poor thing.
Tibby.
But say you want the graham cracker, then the shape is a preference. You see? So that's where we have to go. I think we're done, right?